Schultz's finest meats, USDA prime aged beef, homemade sausages, and only the finest meats. It's 7101 West Edison Street, Chicago. I grew up with a demanding boss, my father, in our butcher shop on the south side. And these guys, Sal and Ben Camarda of Joseph's Finest Meats, are just as demanding of quality, just as exacting. They're all about the quality of the product. There's no filler. There's no dye. There's nothing but USDA prime dry-aged beef, homemade sausage, and only the finest meats. Take it from the butcher's son. For the holidays, for Christmas, I'm driving across Indiana into Chicago, and only one place, Joseph's Finest Meats, where I'm getting my beef for that beautiful standing rib roast for Christmas. Joseph's Finest Meats. A family tradition since 1977, 7101 West Addison Street, Chicago, Illinois, at the corner of Addison and Nordica. Proud sponsor of John Cass News and the Chicago Way podcast. So as we pray for Bethany McGee, the poor 26-year-old woman, young woman who was burned alive on the CTA the other day, the burner, Lawrence Reed shrieking at the top of his lungs, "Burn, bitch, burn, bitch, burn alive, bitch." I thought we should have someone talk to us about what's next. What's next for the Safety Act, supported by Governor J.B. Pritzker? And what's next for the Cook County Judiciary, which is really run by the boss of the Cook County Democratic Party, Tony Preckwinkle? And I thought we should have someone who advocates for law enforcement. He's been in law enforcement all his life. His name is Thomas Weitzel. He's the retired police chief of Riverside, Illinois. Spent 37 years in law enforcement and held every rank dealing with Cook County State's Attorney, like Preckwinkle and Kim Fox, and the governor's office. Jeff Carlin is here, of course. My friend, executive producer, WGN Radio, friend to cats, baker of pies, future physics teacher, voice of reason. And me, I'm John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, writing about this and other things, only $50 a year, less than $1 a week for two exclusive columns by me and another one by our superior stable of guest columnists who write on everything from food to immigration policy, only $50 a year for John Cass News, your source for a cup, a good strong cup of Midwestern common sense. And where are you as Bethany McGee tries to recover in the hospital, as the politicians circle to try to deflect blame and the media does nothing? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way. Absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So as promised, our guest today is retired police chief Thomas Weitzel of Riverside, who's been watching the destruction and collapse of the criminal justice system in Cook County. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, John, and thank you so much for having me. You know what? Been in law enforcement for 37 years, at least when I retired. I did 37 years in the same department, that's Riverside, and I held every position in the department. And when I was finally named or appointed police chief, you know, the Cook County court system was at a chaos at that time. So I had a well-established back and forth with, at that time, Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox, and just the whole system. And, you know, Riverside operated out of the Maybrook Courthouse. Okay, that was our courthouse in the 4th Municipal District. And I would often have run-ins with the presiding judge of the 4th District, and then, of course, Chief Judge Evans, who, in my opinion, John, is the most unresponsive chief judge of Cook County ever.
He's a frayed little baby, and he just worries about what suit he's going to wear and what he's going to have for lunch. He's really a frayed little baby in that office. He doesn't want to open the door to see what's on the other side.
You know, he wouldn't even you could reach out to his office. You could email, you could call, you could write letters. He didn't even respond, or he didn't even have a staff member respond to police officers or police chiefs ever. In all my years, as 13 years as chief, he would not even have a staff member respond to your concerns or your complaints. And that made me go over his head, John. You know, when I was chief, I filed complaints with the Judicial Inquiry Board and the Discipline Board, which operates in secrecy. And every time I'd follow up on my complaints, they would tell me that they couldn't even acknowledge I made the complaint. So they wanted policing to be open and transparent, but they certainly did not want our courts to be open and transparent.
Well, Tom, I think you made a mistake there, because you didn't know how to approach Tim Evans. For years, the only guy who could get to him on one call would be Eddie Verdoliak, because Verdoliak farmed out CTA personal injury cases to Timmy years ago, back in the day, before he was made judge. And I would assume that he'd pick up a phone anytime Verdoliak called him, but that's just me.
Do I have to add an allegedly to that, John, or is that known information?
Allegedly. You want allegedly? Yeah, allegedly.
just to keep the lawyers happy.
Yeah.
Chief, it's good to have you here, and it's good to always get some insight into the mess that is Cook County's judicial system. Tom, I'd love to get your, I like to call it the bona fides. You know, you sound like you got a good Chicago accent, so you're from the area. We've got a little bit, you know, you spent your whole career in Riverside, but how'd you get into law enforcement? Was it a family thing? Was it something you always wanted to do?
It's something I always wanted to do. You know, I grew up in River Forest, and my uncle was the police and fire commissioner for the River Forest Police Department. So I got an interest in law enforcement from him. And I was the type of kid that went to a Catholic grade school, St. Luke's in River Forest. And every time I'd hear a siren, I'd run to the windows, and the nuns would have to pull me back to my seat. I wanted to be a policeman my entire life. I went to school for it. After getting out of high school, I went to college to get my associate degree and then my bachelor's degree, and then I finished my master's degree in criminal justice when I was a police officer. And like I said, I served for 37 years. I held every position in the department. I come from a police family. All my kids right now, all my adult kids, are all police officers. I have two that work in Cook County and one that works in Will County. And you know, my cousin was retired as a commander for the Illinois State Police. My brother was a sergeant in Grundy County Police Agency. So I have a deep roots with law enforcement. So Riverside was a really good community to police. As you can imagine, there wasn't a lot of violent crime. But they also had their politicians, and the village presidents in my community were very supportive of policing and police in general, which made my job much easier.
What was it about it? Was it about, were you a Boy Scout, you know, a rules follower type that wanted to make sure everybody did things the right way, or is it more of a service to the community kind of thing?
Mine was a little bit more of a service to the community, and also a little bit more of, my mom used to tell me if I didn't get into law enforcement, I'd be in jail. So I really did want to get into law enforcement, and I really worked towards that. And that was a goal from grade school that I never deviated from. So I always knew I would be a police officer. I just didn't know where it would be, if it'd be local, federal, you know, what it was going to be at that time. But my first police job ever, it's kind of unusual, was at the Brookfield Zoo. So a lot of your listeners might not know this, but the Chicago Zoological Society, known as Brookfield Zoo, has its own police department. And back then when I tested, you tested with the village of Brookfield and they put you on the same list. And if they had an opening at the zoo, you could go to the zoo as a police officer. So that was the first offer I ever got. And that's the one I took.
That's awesome.
And I'm here with Jim Barker and Beth Horitzai for Kribi Coffee. That's Kribi Coffee, K-R-I-B-I, our new sponsors. I keep saying, John Cass News, where you can always pour yourself a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And that means Kribi Coffee to me. I love it.
John, I couldn't agree more. And I did it yesterday in my Moosa mug that I recently purchased and enjoyed a great cup of Mount Oku as I read your column on Sunday morning. Hear, hear.
You know, Thanksgiving is coming, and you're going to need a good cup of coffee, but how do I get my hands on it?
Well, right now we're in two cafes in the Forest Park and Oak Park areas, but we also are in your local retailers like Pete's and Tony's, but you can find us online at kribicoffee.com, KRIBICOFFEE.com. You can actually customize to the exact setting that you want. So the grind and the roast, whole bean, whatever you'd like, you can get it right there.
Interesting. So I just want the coffee and scoop it out, put it in the coffee maker. How can I do that?
We can do that for you. Just go to kribicoffee.com. You can shop right there for anything you want.
And it'll deliver to your doorstep within, I think it's 5 days, isn't it?
Yes.
You'll deliver it to my house?
Yes.
Wow.
You can even get a subscription so you never have to go back on again. We'll just automatically deliver it to you.
I've canceled all my other subscriptions, like for the paper, but I will subscribe to Kribi Coffee. Yeah. Because I've had your product. It's rich, it's tasty, and it's not like that crazy mushroom nonsense. It's real coffee.
It is real coffee.
Yes, it is.
Kribi Coffee, proud sponsor of John Cass News and the Chicago Way podcast. We always get a good cup of common sense. You know, you got to balance between, there's a debate here. Jeff lifted the cover on it. Between the guys who are in the back of the room, the troublemakers like me, and the guys who are rule followers. And somehow you got to make a police force out of both those types, at least those two. How do you do that? How do we bring the rule followers together with the bad boys? Because sometimes you just need bad boys out there to scare the bad boys away, don't you?
That's very true, John. You know what? When I was chief and I was hiring, we would always, you know, when I first got hired, a lot of military were coming into law enforcement. You know, that's not the case anymore, but we would see a lot of applicants that had military experience. And then we would see people right out of college.
Right.
And the best officers that came to us either had military bearing, meaning coming out of the military, they knew the structure of law enforcement, but they also had life experience. If you came to us right out of college, it was very difficult during your field training because they don't have any life experiences, and you got to know when you got to cut some things loose. You know, everybody that's drinking a beer illegally shouldn't be going to jail or shouldn't be arrested. You have to have the common sense sometimes to take that beer and pour it out into the sewer and tell these kids, you know, knock it off. Next time I catch you, maybe we'll take you to your parents or something. But you have to have that person that has life experience and maybe was a little bit not of a rule follower because they can relate to the people right that we're dealing with in law enforcement. So that's a really good point.
Yeah, you just need the cop to pour out the beer or at least say, you can't drink this, Schlitz.
Yes. Well, the number one skill is you have to deal with people. And we need people that have life experience. They actually make the best police officers.
Sure.
One of the reasons why I asked you to come on is because you put out a tweet that I thought should be the overriding image of the political campaign, our political life in Cook County. If I'm not mistaken, it was the picture of the poor girl, Bethany McGee. And she was burning, and you asked a question, when will the political people in this county treat victims with concern. And I really don't see a concern out there, Tom. I really don't. It's more like, how can I get out of this? How can I not be questioned? How can I proceed along the day where Tony Preckwinkle, is never questioned about what happened?
And there's a definite disconnect, right? And I think we've lost some of our humanity, and certainly some of the court employees, the judges, even certain media outlets, they want to capitalize on these horrific crimes that could be, it's no longer maybe. Many of these horrific crimes could have been prevented by keeping people in custody. That's not in doubt anymore. You look at this individual, Lawrence Reed, right. His criminal history, he absolutely should have been in custody. And, you know, unfortunately, people think that that's a rarity, but that's because a lot of the cases don't get the notoriety. You know, I could tell you a personal case in Riverside where we arrested an individual who had 99 prior arrests, and he was only in his early 50s, and he was going down the street on Ogden Avenue with a 2-year-old in a stroller, going house to house, begging for money to support his drug habit. And when we arrested him for child endangerment with the child, our arrest was his 100th arrest. Now, out of all of those arrests, he served 4 years in prison out of 100 arrests. That didn't get any notoriety. It didn't get it. It just wasn't a big case.
Right.
It ended up going to DCFS. But those cases are more common. The case involving Lawrence Reed, extremely violent. And, you know, the victim is still fighting for her life. Yeah. And I think people are dismissing this as a rare occasion or an isolated incident, which I hate that term. It is not. It is not an isolated incident. It's just right. One that generated a lot of notoriety.
Come on, Tom Weitzel.
John Wayne Gacy is an isolated incident, not some career criminal who beats up the most people he interacts with. Tom, I mean, and that's what we'll bring you to. So you've got a Substack, and John alluded to that, but where you've been taking, now that you're retired, you got some time, you got some perspective, you got some insight, and you're reacting to what you're seeing. Where can people find that, or where do you want people to go to track that down?
You can go to Substack, and my column that I write is called The Memo. You can certainly Google me. It'll come up. I'm active on X, the former Twitter, at Chief Weitzel. And I also have a TikTok because I want to be able to reach the certain demographics that are on TikTok and push back against this narrative that policing is collapsing and that, you know, police officers and policing is bad. And you know how difficult it is already to retain officers, and it's getting much more difficult to recruit. So I'm trying to push back on what I call false narratives. And some of it is absolutely just outright lies.
What are some of the lies that he getting told to boil your blood?
No, the reason I even started the Substack, I'll tell you. So I kept submitting either letters to the editor, the op-ed, to the Chicago Sun-Times, other newspapers. They would not run mine. Okay, they wouldn't run it. They'd send me an email that said, you know, we're not running yours. And it was over either Border Patrol or ICE. And I wanted to set the record straight. Regardless of whether you, what your opinions were on the Trump administration or ICE enforcement, a lot of the narrative being put out was false and outright lies. So I wrote my own op-eds or letters to the editors, and I got an email back from the editor-in-chief from the Sun-Times that said, we're not running this. And then I said, well, you're putting out a mapping tool to follow ICE. You're putting out a tool that citizens can go on and post photos, locations, and then you're turning that portal into a mapping and trapping device that people can go on and follow them all over. I said, I've never seen that before in the media. I've never seen a news organization do that. So I wrote an op-ed on opposing that, and you know what? They wouldn't print it. And I'm like, and I sent it to several news organizations, wouldn't print it. Always got to reject it. I'm like, well, this is biased in itself. So what can I do to push back against it? And that's why I started my Substack account.
The water's warm, Tom. Jump in, because there's a few of us out there trying to do the job, and you're doing it. And I appreciate it, because the media and the papers particularly have failed. Why have they failed? because they don't have common sense and they don't treat people, readers, with respect, like you did when you were police chief. You have to give the people a little wiggle room and treat them with respect. That's what I think.
Yeah, and they're not even giving opposing views. They're not even fair. You know, they're not even giving an opposing view to their position. In many cases, I think that some news organizations are aligning themselves with activists, and they're putting out their views and their bias, which they don't think, but they will not print or will not consider anything that is in opposition. That's fair?
Okay, you guys, I got a secret to tell both of you. Don't let anyone else out there, don't listen. But at the Tom Serafin Thanksgiving party, I saw an editor of my former place, the paper, and I asked, after we said hello and everything and shook hands and so forth, I asked, when will the Tribune open a bureau in Broadview? Sorry, I shouldn't laugh at my own joke. But it seems like that they should open a bureau, a Broadview bureau, because they're constantly pushing the ICE story. Why is that, Jeff and Tom? Because they're getting clicks out of it. It's all about getting support from their diehard subscribers, but those subscribers are generally left-wing, municipal, union, CTU-type people, and they want to be validated. And then you get the one group crushing against the other one.
You're absolutely right, John. Absolutely right. You know, I have friends currently in law enforcement that are assigned to the ICE facility in Broadview. They go there on call outs when they have this, and they're there all the time. And you know what? The same individuals are showing up. They're telling me that they say, hey, Tom, they're coming. This is all staged. They're coming with their own media. They're coming with Chicago media. They show up with their own photographers and videos. They have pro bono lawyers with them. They have tents set up for food and water. And then they wait. They wait to rush what I would call the skirmish line of the police departments that are there, the state police, sheriff's police, local police, right, until the media is set up. And they say that it's like it's completely staged for media prominence and to get their message across. And then when you think what I said earlier, well, they won't even print my opposing views. Really? I mean, it is a complete scam what's going on in Broadview. It is staged. And if anybody thinks that there's anything else but just that is staged for media, they're kidding themselves.
So what is behind it? What motivates it? I would say left-wing labor unions, CTU, SEIU, those sorts of groups are behind this, and George Soros and those financing it. And I'm not seeing anything. I wish I would see something from Trump to identify and call these people out. I'm not seeing it.
No. And although they are, you know, they're not going away. People think that the enforcement is over. It's not. It'll probably, especially after this horrific crime on the CTA. I did see Trump state that they'll be back in Chicago. And, you know, the federal government is out looking to purchase additional land for ICE facilities. That's already been publicly stated. So you may not see the great amount of push from the Border Patrol and the National Guard.
Yeah.
But I was really disappointed and shocked. I mean, one of my positions nowadays is I serve as an ambassador for Illinois for the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, and I help families that officers are killed in the line of duty. I help their families through the process. I help their families get all the funding, that the free dollars that are available, pay off mortgages, free college. And when I saw some of the rhetoric around the guardsman being shot, and in one case she was killed in Washington, D.C., shot in the head, she was an MP. So she's a military police officer. Yeah. And the newspapers are quoting activists saying this is exactly what the Trump administration wants, that this murder of the National Guard in Washington, D.C. member will only further his cause. And it was planned and they're happy that it happened. I saw those quotes. And this is a military police officer.
Yeah. I mean, that's awful. And John, I mean, to your point about why in
because all politics is local.
Right, right. Because all politics is local. The left has worked so hard, in especially over the course of the last 20 years or so, to change the narrative. And we've seen, we talked about this in different aspects of life, but you know, they've made, try to make Americans feel guilty about being an American abroad, and there's this and that. So they've made it that it's more a ethical choice. And so these journalists fall in line on that and say, well, I'm covering this because it's the ethical, it's the right thing to do. They've worked so hard, the left, to make that feel like reality, when in reality, it's they're being propagandized by the old machine, and they're running things into the ground. But I, John, we started this, and I think we've kind of drifted off of the part of Cook County. You know, Cook County is a problem here, and I want to get to this time because you said you've got children who work for in law enforcement in both Cook County and Will County. Is that right?
Correct.
What was Thanksgiving like with those talking shop between them? Because they have to see it firsthand, the stark differences between both systems. Because I tell you, you see it very rarely, but you see these car chases that lead out of the city and they wind up in Will County, and you know the Will County cops are waiting for them, and they book them, and these kids are like, I'll be out on the street in 24 hours. And the cops are like, you're in Will County, son. You're not going to see the light of day for a couple of, maybe a week. Just relax. You know, what were you hearing? What are your kids talking about? And you know, don't name anybody. Obviously, we don't want, you know who your kids are, but you can generalities. I don't want to jam anybody up.
For sure. So there is a stark difference between Cook County and Will County. In fact, Cook County and any other county. But for example, in Will County, you can go drive down the streets in the municipalities and they have a lawn sign that says, "We support our police." When in Cook County, you can drive around and it'll say defund the police or Black Lives Matter or those types of things. And
hate has no home here. When I lived in Cook County, it was hate has no home here, Tom.
Right. And the criminals, they don't know where they're at. Here's the problem. They don't know if, for example, you know, Orland Park is in Cook County, but Lockport is in Will County, and they get arrested. And when they find out that they're not walking out the door 10 minutes later on a notice to appear, they're like, "What? Like, where am I?" "Yeah, you're in Will County now. You're not going home. You're going to court." And they're like, "We're sending you to court." And what happens in court will happen in court. But anybody that follows the criminal justice system here in Illinois knows that there is a difference between the court system in Cook County and any other county in Illinois. They will look at it differently. And that's why a lot of the criminals like to stay out of the suburban areas if they can, because they will chase you. They will foot chase you. They will chase you in the car. They will bring the maximum felony charges against you, and they will attempt to hold you in custody, which is now called first appearance court.
Right.
I hear a rumor is that they also, if you're trying to hide under somebody's house and they have a canine dog out there, they'll release the canine dog, but it doesn't have a muzzle on it. It'll bite you.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why the DuPage County and Will County and McKenna, they can recruit police officers a lot easier. You know why? Because the police officers can do their job within the parameters. I'm not saying they're out of control, and I'm not saying police don't require oversight, because we do. But you have to let police officers also do the job they're hired for.
But one thing is different, and one thing remains. Cook County is run by Cook County Democrat Tony Preckwink. And there is no, in the criminal justice system, my view, and tell me if I'm wrong, that the criminal justice system in Cook County has been so pitched against law enforcement and the constituent and the citizens. Only one reason, Toni Preckwinkle. She's the one who's decarcerating, meaning removing people from the jail, letting them out early. And that creates havoc on, you know, she does so to get progressive points with black voters But the people who are being hurt are generally mostly minorities themselves, not excepting a Bethany McGee. And I'm still coming back to the same question I asked you guys before. Why haven't I seen any news stories or editorials condemning Tony Preckwinkle or Governor J.B. Pritzker or the Safety Act, which let this guy out, Lawrence Reed, to burn this girl?
It's because many of the news organizations, especially print, are in line with the agenda from the governor's office and the Cook County leadership. And they consider this reform, or they consider it what Kim Fox once told me in person, is reimagining policing. And that includes the court system. And that ridiculous term means gutting policing and gutting our reforms system. And they don't care about victims or victims' families. They could care less. They care about their political agenda, pushing it forward and to reimagine. I sat in a meeting when I was still in Riverside. One of the years I was there, I was president of the West Suburban Chiefs of Police Association. It took in every police agency in the West Suburbs, plus some in DuPage. And I was appointed to a committee by then President Preckwinkle. And I don't know if you remember, I think her chief of staff then was Juliana Stratton. And I sat in a meeting where they wanted me to get on board with juvenile reform. And what they had put on the table was so ridiculous and so far-fetched that I wouldn't support it as the president of this organization, the West Suburban Chiefs, with 32 municipalities. And they said to me, you know what, Tom, you'll support this or you'll be off the committee. And I said, well, and the only reason they put me on the committee is because I happen to be president of the West Suburban Chiefs Association. And I said, I can't support it. Our members can't support it. And you know what? They just marginalized me.
Right.
And they never took our opinion into consideration, and they move forward. And that's what they do. They bulldoze you. They just move forward, especially when you don't have any political power.
And so the young girl, Bethany McGee, gets on the L, and a guy with 72 arrests, a violent thug. Yeah, I said it, thug, because that's what he is. This is the guy, when I see him on the L, I'm a crippled old man. I can't even walk. I have a cane, but I'd finger what I'd have in my pocket and look at him and think, you son of a bitch, look at him. He's walking around threatening people, threatening this girl, and then he pours gasoline on her, lights her on fire, and then says, burn, bitch, burn alive, bitch, when police picked him up, screaming. That's what we're dealing with, thanks to Tony Preckwinkle and J.B. Pritzker.
Exactly. Yeah, that's their agenda. And you know, I saw the governor said, well, finally, after this, right, this victim set on fire on the CTA blue line, he said, well, I think we could look at maybe modifications to the Safety Act or a trailer. So it took that incident for him to, oh, because he's never, since it was passed in 2021, has he ever been open to any modifications.
This was just so egregious that, you know, what option does he have? He has to say something. He can't say nothing. And John, to your point, you talked about, you know, there wasn't any editorials in the papers, and you know, it's got a lot of coverage. I will say that the story is so egregious, and it's such a blatant example of a flaw in this system that we've all been talking about for years before this thing even came around. But my point is
editorials.
Let me finish my point, John.
Okay.
You haven't seen them. It's okay. They haven't seen them locally, which is, you know, tying the Cook County chief, Tony Preckwinkle, directly to this. Well, you did see Byron York write about this, but not in the sense, you know, and which is amazing, you know, that it took an outside view to see how blatantly messed up this is and have an editorial from way outside the city. You have Byron York, of all people, doing it. And that is, I think, more of a symptom of what we've talked about here and how in the past, how the politicians here in the city, the Chicago way, how you doing, are in the same class of people who run and own and manage all these media outlets. And so they're all part of the same club. And so they're not going to force the issue. And you have the people who had editors in the room who have way of the other things, more important things they think are important, are not going to force the issue. And so then it becomes really just slips through the cracks, and no one wants to make that argument because, well, this is bad enough, that kind of thing. And that's where we are.
You don't want to pile on. Come on, Cass. Come on,
Right.
Prof. Why,
Right.
what are you doing? You're mean. Don't be mean.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
I'll be mean. I'll be mean to them. I'll
It's unbelievable that this guy, I mean, this story is just
still out there.
yeah, right. And he is one of many, and the system is letting everybody like him apparently out, if and or at least if they're out, they're not going back in right away.
What can the citizens do? That's the
Yes,
question
that's
now.
the question, Tom. You laid it out in one of your pieces on Substack, kind of a starting point as far as outlining changes that could be made, or at least new laws or change. And the legislation for legislation's sake in this state is crazy. We always complain about that, but what can we do? Where do we start?
First of all, the Safety Act does have to be reformed. There needs to be some improvements. And just
Right.
some su my suggestions would be we have to really outline what crimes you can be held in custody for. We have to get rid of these of you cannot put a warrant out for somebody that we're sending them postcards. And I can tell you that they never put their real address on there. So those postcards are just going into the abyss somewhere. And that we can go after people. We can pick them up on warrants, hold them in custody. You can take their criminal history into effect or into consideration and when you're in front of them and hold them on that alone. You know, a lot of people look at say, well, this individual was held in custody. This was an aggravated battery, and the judge held them in custody. They didn't hold him in custody on the aggravated battery. He had an outstanding warrant for his arrest, and they violated him on the outstanding warrant. And we also have this process where other judges can release.
Right.
So even when a judge at first appearance court holds a defendant. A week later, they're up in front of another judge, and their lawyer will say, well, I want my client released. And another judge who didn't hear the case in the first place says, okay, we'll put this individual on electronic monitoring, or we'll just release them with restrictions on daytime hours and nighttime. And that's ridiculous. So they're passing, these judges are going to another judge. It's like shopping until they could find a judge that will release this individual.
Well, who runs the Cook County Democratic Party but the trial lawyers? And you saw, I
It's
mean, that's true. I'm not,
so true.
right? They're the ones who dictate policy. And
Speaking of the Verdoliaks of the world,
really,
jeez.
you know what? I know Eddie Verdoliak, or at least I did back in the day. This
Right.
is not you.
No, this is not,
He
would
might,
not
he
be his
might, he
end
might,
game.
back in the day, he might give you, have you hold his coat. And he'd go in the cell himself
Right.
and lock the door. There's one thing about the old Chicago. Yes, the outfit ruled. Yes, there was corruption. But in terms of attacking young girls and burning them, there was no mercy. I can't even talk about it without choking up. There was no mercy.
Right. You crossed the line
Yeah.
and you knew it was bad for you and everybody who knew
Exactly.
you.
So,
here's what's coming in some of the, I'll tell you what's coming with the
yeah.
Lawrence Reed case. So
Okay.
there's going to be pretty soon a spokesman for the chief judge's office will be coming out with a statement that'll say that the judge in that case was only following the provisions of the Safety Act. So they're going to fall back on saying, well, she let him out because the Safety Act requires that he can be released on alternatives except for incarceration. So it's all going to go back to the Safety Act. They're going to blame it on the Safety Act. They're going to say that the judge was just following the options available to her at that time.
Right.
I disagree with that. He could have easily be held in custody. So that's what we're going to see. We're going to see a passing of the buck. We're going to see them blame the Safety Act, and we're going to see him blame the governor. Well, you know what? Then let's go in and do something about the Safety Act.
You mentioned too, there is some legislation that we can do to help cops and make the system, because it's always a pendulum, right? Depending on who's running the state, or and we want that pendulum to work for the public and be best for all of us. What some of the things you think you can say? You talked about some sort of legislation that might be able to keep cops protected, you know, because we've had a record number of cops killed by in the line of duty this year, I think, which is awful. Where do we go from that?
There's lots of legislation that could help law enforcement. There's federal legislation in Washington that's been sitting there for years. The Serve and Protect Act, the Thin Blue Line Act, those are all federal legislations that benefits law enforcement. Locally here in Illinois, you know, the legislators in Springfield are constantly trying to take away every tool from policing. They have tried to limit traffic stops. They have tried to say this, their favorite term, pretextual traffic stops, which is ridiculous. I'm telling you.
Say again, Tom, what was
the
that?
Pretextual traffic stops are ridiculous.
For those of us not in the know, explain that, what that is, what that means.
Yeah. So in Illinois, the legislators believe that the pretextual traffic stops are illegal. Well, the United States Supreme Court ruled they're totally legal, number one. Number two, that's like a pretextual traffic stop is, okay, I'm on patrol and I see you driving down the street with no headlights at 10 p.m. And I stop you for driving with no headlights and you end up being drunk or you have a suspended license or you have a warrant for your arrest. And then I make that arrest based on the fact I stopped you for no headlights. They're saying that that's pretextual, that I only stopped you as a police officer for having no headlights to make the arrest for DUI or to find out that you have the warrant, which is ridiculous because you don't even know who's driving. You don't know that person's right. status. But they say police officers abuse that. Well, you know what? Those laws are currently in the statutes in Illinois, in the Illinois Vehicle Code. It is unlawful to drive without headlights at night. Right. My response has always been, if you don't like that, then get rid of it. But they're currently still state law. So they you know, they in Springfield, they want to take away these tools. They want to take away training. They want to take away. There was a bill that would require officers only discharge their stun guns on certain parts of a body of an offender. And could you imagine during a struggle when they want you to use less than lethal weapons,
right,
that you could only shoot that stun gun in the chest? If you hit the individual in the groin or the back or the shoulder, or you hit him in the thigh, it would be unlawful and you could be held civilly responsible. Jeez. I mean, that is absurd.
The only way to deal with that idiocy is to put the legislator, like a committee of legislators, in a cell with about 10 Lawrence Reeds and see. Okay, only hit the part that we told you to hit and see what happens.
Right.
You know what happens in Springfield now, John, is that they never consult the chiefs anymore. When I first started, when they were looking at a legislation that would impact law enforcement, they would seek our opinion. They would call these meetings, and I was on the Illinois Chiefs Legislative Committee for 15 years. I would attend the meetings and we would say, how does this impact patrol? Like, how does this impact right. your operations? Could you help us tweak it? They never do that anymore. They never seek input from police chiefs in serious situations. They look at it and they say, oh, well, you know, you just have your own agenda that we're going to pass this legislation because the people that got me elected, the people that I serve, want this. They want this. They want police reform, but it's not police reform. It's gutting the profession. But they don't take our opinions on how it impacts the job of policing serious at all.
There was one guy who used to herd the cats in Springfield. His name was Mike Madigan. I was a big critic of his, and I pushed and pushed to have him sent away. But now that he's gone, I see there is nobody left to herd the cats in Springfield. And for example, you have unscrupulous people like Tony Preckwinkle playing race games and no countervailing force in Springfield to say, wait a minute, let's try to be reasonable and so that we don't lose everybody. And they're terrified. And you see a wind, like a wind blowing, and the wind is created by the mouths of moms of black gangbangers, and they don't want the kids arrested or punished. How dare you, my baby, my baby. and you hear the screaming, and what happens? The legislators back off. Yes or no?
It's such a controlled atmosphere in Springfield that's a Democrat. I mean, it is. There's no, right. I mean, you can't deny that. Right. And you sometimes have outright threats. And people think that doesn't happen. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, I had an incident where I attended a meeting as the president of the West Suburban Chiefs in the South Suburbs on retail theft and felony review. And Kim Fox walked in the office or in the meeting and said, this is what's going to happen. And I stood up and said, you're not going to take our opinion. You're not going to. Nope. And I was at that meeting with the president of the North Suburban Chiefs and the South Suburban Chiefs. So at that time, you may know him, was Tim McCarthy from Orland Park. And we're at the meeting and I went ballistic. And I'm like, our members of the West, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do it. And she's like, she got up and walked out of the room and said, you're going to do what I say, Chief. I run felony review. We approve the cases. Later that day, I got a call from my village president in Riverside. He said, Tom, what did you do today? I said, what are you talking about? He goes, I got a call from the state's attorney's office who told me to get your chief under control.
Oh, geez.
So is that when you were dispatched out to arrest the suspect who threw the big gulp at Kim?
There isn't a police officer that could come on your podcast or your show or you could talk to that you would tell you that throwing a soda drink in a paper cup and hitting an individual would ever be charged as a felony in Cook County in any other case.
It was
a simple battery, but it would never happen unless she was the victim. Never.
But it was.
And you know the story behind that. They sent their chief investigator from the office to Flossmoor PD, and they influenced them and they pressured them. Let's be realistic what took place behind closed doors.
Tell me what you think. Tell me what you heard.
Pull this thread. I like where this is going.
It was a situation where she was walking or jogging, and this gentleman who they arrested, you know, was in a car, and there was some, I think he was actually in a pickup truck. They were some type of verbal altercation. He did get out of his vehicle, threw this cup full of a drink in there. It did hit
her.
She
gave him the finger.
Yes. And, you know, she filed this report with Flossmoor. And I can tell you that the state's attorneys waived everything that they would do in any normal case. They would never have the chief of prosecution for the state's attorney's office or the chief investigator calling your department on a case like this, sending investigators down. It's ludicrous. I can tell you a case that I handled where one of my officers was injured. Okay, injured, taken to McNeil Hospital in Berwyn and was treated for his injuries in the ER. We called felony review for aggravated battery to a police officer. They rejected it. And they called me at home and said, hey, chief, you know, one of our officers were injured. The state's attorney's rejecting it. I called the supervisor for the state's attorney's felony review at the time and said, my officer's injured in the hospital. They said to me, chief, is your officer admitted to the hospital? I said, no, he's being treated in the emergency room at McNeil Hospital. They said, no, we're not approving any felony charges unless he's admitted. And I said,
oh, my God.
I said to them, that's not the statute. Read the statute. The statute said that if the officer is injured in the line of duty by an offender, it's a class 4 felony of aggravated battery. And they said to me, we're not approving it unless your officer is admitted. And they hung up the phone on me.
What?
You know, I'll play judge here. I'd say she gave him the finger and he threw a big gulp. That's mutual combatants.
Mutual combatants.
Yeah, we all know that they use that in other cases, right? There's a famous case in Schaumburg where there was a murder. And the first words out of the state's attorney's mouth for originally either reduced charges or not charging is the fight in the driveway was a mutual combatant situation until they got huge pushback and changed that.
Well, that's Cook County Justice. Now, and the question is, okay, as we close here, the question is, why should anyone stay in Cook County? Because I see if you're a law-abiding citizen, if you're minding your own business, if you're on the L, trying to get to work because you don't have money, I mean, if you had money, you would take an Uber. You get burned, and all of a sudden the politics start kicking up, and you have Judge Molina, what's her name, Gonzalez, BSing, like, I can't put everyone in jail because they asked me to. Why should I stay in Cook County?
You know, if you want justice, you shouldn't stay in Cook County. If you want fairness, you shouldn't stay in Cook County. And I also believe that if you want to come to Cook County, specifically Chicago, to spend your hard-earned dollars, you want to come for entertainment, dinner, go to a show, stay at a hotel for the weekend, you shouldn't come and spend money, because that's the way that the Chicago politicians will start to listen, is when they lose revenue. When revenue plummets from tourism, from conventions, from people visiting the city to shop and dine, then maybe they'll listen and maybe something will happen. That's my belief.
I 100,000% agree. It's not math, but it does send the message. If they're not spending money,
yeah,
and you don't have money to spend on your little pet projects, You know,
somebody asked me the other day, they said, the crime stats are down in Chicago. What, you know, Chief, some of your statements aren't true. I said, you know, the perception of crime isn't down and the violent crime isn't down. And, you know, mass shootings are actually up. So if you're talking about crimes in the neighborhood, maybe burglaries, right, thefts, some of those crimes are down. But to make it seem like Chicago is having this great reduction in violent crime, mass shootings, crimes taking place downtown in the Loop area, that the city's central business district, you're wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And burglary rates, are up, actually. Most among small businesses and homes, especially on the north side where I live, we've seen it an increase there. So there's certainly a trickle-down rate. But, you know, Chief, before we let you go, I want to ask you, too, the next steps of this thing. You kind of talked to other judges that come out with statements saying the judge, you know, followed the ordinance, followed the rules, followed the right protocol, whatever, and they're not to blame. But we've seen the blame being laid at the electronic monitoring system is to blame because this guy was out on electronic monitoring and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's just a scapegoat. They're going to say, oh, well, it needs to be tweaked. It needs to be fixed. I mean, the running joke, from my understanding, is that electronic monitoring in any form in the city and the state for the last 12, 10 years, 15 years is a joke, that it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. And, you know, I wasn't disappointed when Tom Dark got rid of it, because they didn't give him any funding. They didn't give him anything to go with it, where they just made him the scapegoat. And he said, I'm putting it back where it judicially should go. And that's what the chief judge's office. And you know what? The chief judge office can't manage that. They don't even have an enforcement arm. They can't issue warrants. They can't send, they don't have a team of officers that can go out and look for people absconding from EM. And when you are on EM, you get a pass. So say you cut your bracelet off, or say that you don't report in. It's usually 72 hours before they'll even notice that. And it's anyone's guess when they'll go look for you. And it's not because, you know, they don't want to. There's no funding. There's no arm to do that. So anybody that thinks that electronic monitoring is giving the community a sense of safety, they're wrong. EM needs to be completely rehabbed, and that there needs to be specific legislation that goes with it. And I can give you a quick example. There needs to be legislation that says, okay, the sheriff's police from now on is going to do the enforcement of electronic monitoring. We're going to fund this. It's not going to be an unfunded mandate. We're going to give you funding for personnel, for equipment, for to go down and hunt these individuals. We're going to get rid of the piece of legislation that says we can't look for you right away. We're going to go right away. We're going to have teams 24/7. So they go look. That's what needs to happen with electronic monitoring.
It blows my mind. Not taking a shot at any cops here, because I know most cops are doing it for the reasons like you've laid out as a kid, wanting to be a cop, wanting to do good. But you know, we're in a state, in a county, where we have our park districts have police, our rail lines have police, our zoos have police, you know, and yet the electronic monitoring is in the wind, and it's just this thing that we just say, well, we're going to do it and we can't fix it. That blows my mind. And that's where our priorities are, is that this is an easy fix. And you said we could do it. We could put the resources towards it if we wanted to, but we're too busy having these other layers of bureaucracy that just slow things down. Ugh.
They wanted to make it a priority. They would do it. They'd fund it. They'd get the legislation, and it would be uniform throughout the entire state, so that the sheriff's office in Sangamon County would be doing the same thing we're doing in Cook County. That's how justice should work.
If their daughters were threatened, they'd do it.
Yeah.
That's really simple to me. You can't risk another poor girl like Bethany McGee being burned alive, for God's sake. We can't do that.
Sure.
It can't be done.
But you know what? I can guarantee you there will be another case similar to that unless change is made. So you know, the public has to rally. There will be changes only if it's demanded and people that are usually the naysayers get on board too, because that's affecting everybody. Let's face it. This isn't something that's some obscure crime. And you know what? CBW Chicago just put out a story yesterday about a guy that has been arrested 51 prior times for retail theft, and they just indicted him for a series of thefts and robberies in Chicago, and he has 51 prior arrests. So if citizens think that this is a one-off, it's not.
Yeah, right.
What would we do without CWB Chicago? We'd be in trouble because the newspapers don't cover crime. The periodicals don't cover it. Only CWB. Yeah,
they're an outstanding news organization. They actually pull the transcripts. They actually go get court records, which a lot of the daily papers don't do.
Tim Heck.
That's one of the biggest differences, is that they report on news and facts and words and meaning, and the rest of the media in the city, for the most part, reports on press releases and statements and glowing things that they don't take any.
They might run their press releases past CTU, SAIU, and all the other commies that are out there, Broadview. And can we print this? Is this okay to print?
Well, maybe. Allegedly.
That's what it is. Allegedly. Okay. Allegedly. But that's what it is.
Chief, it's been great to talk to you. Thanks for sharing. And people should check out your Substack. It's a good perspective from a chief's point of view about the just disaster that is our criminal justice system right now.
I appreciate that. I'm going to release today a letter I wrote to Governor Pritzker last week telling him we need changes in the Cook County judge system. So I'll send you that just for the heck of it. But I don't expect a reply, but I'm trying to do everything I can to make an impact.
And we've all seen those slating sessions when people want to be judges. They're before the Cook County Democratic Party. They stand up and they say, I've been a good Democrat all my life. That's the only qualification that they have.
Okay. Crazy.
Yeah.
All right, Chief. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me again. Thank you to both of you.
You're awesome. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
For Thomas Weitzel, Police Chief Riverside, retired. Good guy, has a Substack, and I'll be writing about it this week. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my good friend, the best radio producer in Chicago, future physics teacher, friend of Katz, baker of pies. And for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, I've already had my cup of Cribby coffee. I'm ready to write some Mootza columns. Join us again next time for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.